Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this is not a metered verse. What is it? What's the number of the verse? 28? Aha. Okay. So I'm going to read the just the word by word. Kvapi Deva Mayaya Striya Buja Latu Pangundaha Prakshana Vivika Vijano Yad Vihara Viharam Bakula Vidayas Tad Ashrayavashakta Sutta Duhit Kalatra Pashita Valoka Visesti Taparta Hridaya Atmanam Ajitatma Pare Nidhe Tamasi Pahinoti Kvapi Somewhere Deva Mayaya By the influence of the illusory energy Striya In the form of one's girlfriend or wife. Bhujalata, by beautiful arms, which are compared to tender creepers in the forest. Upagudaha, being deeply embarrassed. Praskana, lost. Viveka, all intelligence. Vijnanaha, scientific knowledge. Yat Vihara, for the enjoyment of the wife. Griha Aramba, to find a house or apartment. Akula Hridaya, whose heart becomes engrossed. Tat, of that house. Ashraya Avasatta, who are under the shelter. Shita, of sons. Duhitri, of daughters. Kalatra, of the wife. Pashita Avolokha, by the conversations and by their beautiful glances. Viseshtita, by activities. Abhavita Hridaya, whose consciousness is taken away. Atmanam, himself. Ajita, uncontrolled. Atma, whose self. Apare, in unlimited. Ande, blind darkness. Tamasi, in hellish life. Pahinoti, he hurls. Translation and purport. By His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes, The conditioned soul is attracted by illusion, personified by his wife or girlfriend, and becomes eager to be embraced by a woman. Thus, he loses his intelligence as well as knowledge of life's goal. At that time, no longer attempting spiritual cultivation, he becomes overly attached to his wife or girlfriend and tries to provide her with a suitable apartment. Again, he becomes very busy under the shelter of that home and is captivated by the talks, glances, and activities of his wife and children. In this way, he loses his Krishna consciousness and throws himself in the dense darkness of material existence. Purport. When the conditioned soul is embraced by his beloved wife, he forgets everything about Krishna consciousness. The more he becomes attached to his wife, the more he becomes implicated in family life. One Bengali poet, Bunkim Chandra, says that to the eyes of the lover, the beloved is always very beautiful, even though ugly. This attraction is called Devamaya. The attraction between man and woman is the cause of bondage for both. Actually, both belong to the para prakriti. The superior energy of the Lord. But both are actually prakriti, female. However, because both want to enjoy one another, they are sometimes described as purusha, male. Actually, neither is purusha. But both can be superficially described as purusha. As soon as man and woman are united, they become attached to home, hearth, land, friendship, and money. In this way, they are both entrapped in material existence. The word Bhuja Lata Uba Guda means being embraced by beautiful arms, which are compared to creepers, describes the way the conditioned soul is bound within this material world. The products of sex life, sons and daughters, certainly follow. This is the way of material existence. Translation: sometimes the conditioned soul is attracted by illusion, personified his wife or girlfriend, and becomes eager to be embraced by a woman, and thus he loses his intelligence as well as knowledge of life's goal. And at that time, no longer attempting spiritual cultivation, he becomes overly attached to his wife or girlfriend and tries to provide her with a suitable apartment. Again, he becomes very busy under the shelter of that home, and he's captivated by the talks, the glances, the activities of his wife and children. And in this way, he loses his Krishna consciousness and throws himself in the dense darkness of material existence. Om Magyana Tarangasya Ganagana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Janatasmai Shri Garev Namaha Shri Taitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Bhukam Kadapanayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guram Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagajita Sahagana Raghadavatam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sadagana Lalita Shri Vakpikam Chata E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinogatanga Bando Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Rantanta Kanchana Goranji Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vashambanu Sanatsevi Pranamani Hare Priye Vanchakalpatadruvyascha Kripasindhuvyavacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaiti Gadhar Shivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, what else is new? We've been reading this chapter on the forest of enjoyment, and it's full of admonitions for the conditioned soul to remain detached from so many attractions in this material world. Which reminds me of the story of the Brahman, and he was in the forest and he was trying to do his meditation, but he unfortunately he needed something to take for his sustenance, so he wanted to get a cow so he could take some milk. But in order to have the cow, he needed to have the wife to take care of the cow and milk the cow. And in order to have the wife, then he had to get the house. And in order to satisfy the needs of the wife, he had to have the children. And soon he had no time for his meditation. This is the common tale of woe of the living entity in the material world. And yet, we see that Srila Prabhupada himself was a grihastha. Well, how are we going to reconcile this tremendous caution that's given to us in Bhagavatam with the idea that such an advanced soul would be involved and entwined with children and home, wife, apartments, all these different things? Because he's an acharya. He's an example. And one of his greatest lessons to us was that wherever we are in our progression through millions of lifetimes, we have to, first of all, accept that we are, some of us come in with a strong desire to have the material sense gratification that accompanies this grihastha ashram. But if we do things in a regulated manner, according to Shastra, we can make advancement. If we do things in unregulated, then we create so many problems. If we disregard these rules and regulations, how to proceed in spiritual life, how to make advancement in this, even in this lifetime. So therefore, Prabhupada lived a very scriptural life in his ashram of Grihastha as a beacon for us to follow. It's not that we can automatically assume that we're going to jump to the topmost level. Some of us may be able to, because of our samskara from our past births, we may come into this life and know, I don't want all of the responsibilities and the entanglements of this household life. Even though I may have some temptation, it's not strong enough to lure me into that fly trap of so much distraction from directly thinking every day, serving every day in the mission of bhakti that my spiritual master has emphasized. And some of us, like myself, we come into this life and we are unable to avoid the strong desire, because that seed or that bija is fructifying still. And so we have to learn what is the process by which I can take step by step. This is a gradual process. It is, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that it may take a moment or it may take a million years. And for those of us born in this age of Kali, we have to accept, first of all, that we have very bad karma. There's not one person in this room, no matter how wealthy, no matter how healthy, no matter how beautiful, who has good karma. Very much of good karma. Because look where we are. We're born in an age of iron, of an age of hypocrisy, of an age of quarrel, and an age of short, when our lives are short, when spiritual life is on the back burner for societies. So automatically we have to acknowledge, I really blew it. You know, somehow or another, my activities in my previous life were not too auspicious. Otherwise, I would have been long gone from this material world. I remember when I first became a devotee in 71, and I was listening to such heavy purports, not from the fifth canto, because Prabhupada hadn't translated it yet, but Prabhupada would speak on this issue of sex life. And he made a statement that was very bewildering to me. He said that everything in this world comes from sex. I was saying, well, what about artists and writers and, you know, people who are engineers? They're not thinking about sex. They're just doing their creative thing. So I couldn't understand why Prabhupada would say that everything was dependent on sex life. And it wasn't until many years later that somehow I realized that without sex life, the attraction of the man to the woman and the woman to the man, there wouldn't be any progeny. And if there was no progeny, there wouldn't be any people here. And if there's no people here, we'd all be back in the spiritual world because we'd be free from this attraction, isn't it? So from the gross principle of sex life come so many subtle manifestations of that. So when you look at your life and you see, well, what are my interests? What do I really like to do to enjoy? These are all variations on the same theme or attraction to enjoy Maya and to forget Krishna. And most of us, before we picked up this the Gita Jayanti today, it's a very celebrated day today, so this Bhagavad Gita, we, as it is, not any Bhagavad Gita, but the Bhagavad Gita, we didn't have a distinction between this tendency to enjoy the material world and the differentiation of what is bhakti yoga. How do I shift or dovetail my interests and my desires so that they become purified? We didn't have any idea until we read this, until we heard from Prabhupada's teachings. And even those who read this book, sometimes it takes a long time for them to study and make those distinctions. What action should I perform? What shouldn't I perform? Does Krishna want me to be a brahmachari all my life? Do I need to be a grihastha and live by scriptural injunctions to make gradual process? How do I approach this? I don't even know what's good for myself. How do I know? There's an old saying that a mind that created a problem cannot solve that problem. Have you ever noticed that? If you ever create some problem for yourself, you generally have to, especially on the computer, if you got some problem that you pressed the wrong key, you made the wrong keystrokes on that computer, and all of a sudden everything disappeared, and you can't find it, and you don't know how to find it. You just lost an entire manuscript in a second. What do? Usually it's very difficult for a mind to solve that problem. So you have to ask some techie guy, some geek. Listen, I know I didn't, you know, do a lot for you, but can you help me fix this problem on my computer? I'll pay you, whatever it takes. You go to some other higher authority. So similarly in spiritual life, when you are so covered by illusion, it takes somebody who's not in that illusion to coach you, to take you out. That's called a guru, whether it's a shiksha guru, an instructing guru, or a diksha guru, initiating guru. It takes a guru, it takes a teacher to do that. Someone outside your box. So Prabhupada is what we call in English outside of the box. You know, there's these realms of knowledge that we have. There's what we know, everything we know, right? Then there's a segment of that circle that's things that we don't know. But there's a third part of that circle, of that segment, of the third. It's what we don't know that we don't know. Isn't it? We never think about what we don't know that we don't know. We never thought about things that Prabhupada states in this purport, because they were in the realm of what we don't know that we don't know, because we're like a fish in the water. A fish has no idea that it's in the water. What water? Because everything's water for that fish. So he doesn't think, I'm in the water, because he doesn't know anything else. Unless you're a flying fish, then you might know something else. So we're like that. We don't really grasp the gravity of our situation. My dear godbrother Chandrakarta was telling me the other day that Prabhupada, when he saw someone without their neck beads, their Tulsi neck beads on, he looked, he said, you have no idea how dangerous it is not to wear Tulsi. You have no idea how dangerous. First of all, in the West, we didn't know what is Tulsi. What is it? It's just some wood, some bush. It was in the realm of what we don't know that we don't know. And then it goes even deeper. You don't even know how dangerous it is. This Tulsi actually protects one from great dangers. The greatest danger in life is it protects one from the Yamadutas, the time of death. You always should be wearing these Tulsi beads somewhere, these Kunti Mala somewhere on your body. This will protect you. In case a death can come at any moment, we don't know when it will come. And we don't want to be fools who just think, I will never die today, maybe tomorrow, but not today. That's a foolish mentality. We've seen so many of our god nephews, our god brothers, gone in a moment, in an accident, in a heart attack, so many different ways. Not everybody has the luxury of a peaceful or a long journey to death, slow fade out. No, some people have a sudden death. We don't know when ours will come. One time in Los Angeles, there was a man about 50, early 50s, and he was dancing in kirtan. We were all dancing. It was a big kirtan in front of the deities. And he fell to the floor. Everyone kind of, you know, thought he was swooning and, you know, dancing. He was like in ecstasy. Just fell to the floor. Just crumpled, boom, to the floor. So for about, you know, a few seconds, everybody was still dancing until they realized that he wasn't getting up. He had passed away, dancing in front of the deities. We don't know when that moment will come. So when we're given such profound instruction, how to make progress from whatever situation we're in, even we may have these attractions, even may the man or the woman may want to feel the embrace of each other in this world, we can pass through that stage and make advancement in spiritual life. We can dovetail that desire in Krishna consciousness. It doesn't have to be that we're somehow lesser than somebody else. We're not in competition. Look at the person next to you, on your right, on your left. Go ahead, look at them. Are you in competition with them? Who's going to make it back to Vaikuntha first? It's impossible. We don't even know where we started from. Isn't it? And yet, you know, oh, that person, you know, he's, I better be like that person because they're making, you know, they've obviously made more advance than me. Maybe I should renounce my family now. There was this one man in Pakistan, in Lahore, and he read Prabhupada's books, and he wanted to renounce everything. He was so into Krishna consciousness, a very big man, a VIP there, and his wife was very upset. So upset with him. So she was so angry that he was taking this Krishna consciousness so seriously, because she saw what she wasn't stupid. She read the book. She knew that he was becoming detached from her, from his, you know, the kids were almost grown, so she was worried. She was fearful. And so what she did, she talked to some of the public officials that were in the government, and they made many problems for the man and for his family. She tried to create a big problem for ISKCON. At that time, we were still were able to carry forward some activities. This was some years ago in Pakistan. So he went to his guru. What do? I just want to surrender to Krishna. I just want to free myself from the shackles of this household life. And his guru told him, very good advice. He says, you have to go back to your wife. And you have to practice Krishna consciousness just within your heart and just in private. You cannot disturb your family at this time. This will make it very difficult for the rest of the devotees there. And then you pray to Krishna, please, you give me, somehow or another, you will free me eventually from this attachments, from these attachments. True story. So he went back to Pakistan. He had come here to Mumbai to see his guru. And then he went back to Pakistan and he made some adjustments in his lifestyle. He carried on with his duties. His wife became pacified. And he, for some years, he chanted his 16 rounds in the privacy of his own, just his own life. About 3 or 4 years after that happened, his wife got very ill, and she passed away. And the children were now married, and he was able to leave his city and come and stay in the temple. He was staying in Chapati. And he began to serve the devotees there very nicely. And the rest of his life, he just took care of the brahmacharis. That's what his job was. Just servicing them, making sure they had prasadam when they came back late from engagements. He was always the last one to take rest. And he was always at every morning program. Until he, a few years later, passed away. Very beloved Babu of all the brahmacharis there. So in this way, he fulfilled his obligations in household life, and Krishna made nice arrangements for him to, in this life, focus simply on serving the devotees, which is the highest form of service. We may think serving the deities is the highest form, but actually serving the devotees is the most nectarian. Prabhupada was so pleased. Actually, everyone is a devotee. Some know it, and some don't know it. So when we go out on this book distribution, you're not serving the karmis. You're serving the devotee that is covered by offering them this Bhagavad Gita, as it is. I met one man on the beach the other day. Oh, I read Gita every day. I've read Gita every day for 25 years. So I said, oh, then you must know that Krishna is God. Yes, Krishna is God, Rama is God, Ganesha is God, they're all God. I said, what Gita are you reading? Are you reading the Prabhupada's Gita as it is? Are you reading that Gita? Yes, I'm reading that Gita. There's no way he was reading Prabhupada's Gita for 20 years. You can't read Prabhupada's Gita for 20 years and not understand that Krishna is the Supreme Person, the Adi Purusha. It's just impossible. We all know that, isn't it? Just read the introduction to Gita that Prabhupada wrote. One of the best, most concise summaries of all the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita is right there. And if you haven't read Prabhupada's summary in a while, take this Gita Jayanti Day and read that introduction, you will be enlivened. That is how Prabhupada is speaking so clearly. And in this purport, he's speaking to persons who may be at that stage where they go, yes, I've had it. I'm full up to here with entanglements in the material world. I want to only concentrate on my service to Krishna, and my senses, they're satiated. I understand by my jnana, I understand by my vijnana, that there is no purpose in trying to satisfy these senses that are forever demanding. They're always leading me into more situations of entanglement. But for some of us, we say, I can't control some of these senses. My eyes are wandering to the beautiful forms of the women, or in the women's case, my eyes are wandering to the form of the man, or the sense of protection from the man, which is a natural thing. And Prabhupada has given that wonderful example of appearing in this householder life, leaving his family at an age, appropriate age, and then practicing in more focused Krishna conscious life in the later stages. We are the most fortunate because we don't have a cheating guru. We have a guru whose life and precepts are without any question, they're without any fault. And there's nobody I can say that has, at least in my purview, in my view, in a Vaishnavism, there's nobody who has had such a eminent example to follow in the contemporary days. And that's why all of us stand on his shoulders and we represent him in a way that we can simply offer people the knowledge that we've gained, because he gave us that standard and we try to come up to that standard. But he is a pure devotee of Krishna, and we may be 50% or 70% or 2% or 99%, but Prabhupada, he was the genuine article. He's 100%, and whatever you read from him or whatever you experience from learning about his life, these are examples that we learn how to live our own lives. Now here it's said that we're all prakriti, we're all feminine. So ultimately, even those of us who are in the male bodies, we have to surrender our ego, our male ego, to be subservient, to be a position of submissive service. That's a feminine position. Radharani is our worshipful Lord, more so even than Krishna. And her service to Krishna is the actual service that we've been given through the teachings that Prabhupada has brought forward of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of this Madhurya Ras, this very special relationship that is only available on Krishna Loka. It is not existing on the other Vaikuntha planets. So when Krishna mentions the secret of all secrets in Bhagavad Gita, he's saying, well, this knowledge is the secret of all secrets, but there's even a secret to the secret. That's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although he appears to be a devotee of Krishna, we know, of course, that he's Krishna, Radha and Krishna in one, that the secret of that is that there are different rasas available, but in the Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, they're offering us an opportunity to take that Madhurya Ras. And that's unique. That you won't find. Even in the other Sampradayas, you won't find it. There's so many bhaktas, so many relationships with Vishnu and different incarnations of Ram bhaktas and so many things. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came to say, yes, all that's there, but I have something really special to offer to you. You can have this relationship, a conjugal relationship with Krishna. And that is reserved only for the very, very few. But in this age, I'm offering it to everybody. And we have recipients. So when you study this nature of the soul to be prakriti, to be feminine, as stated in this, hinted at, really, what is the opportunity available in that relationship, in that ras, we then move from the Bhagavatam's teachings, which is a lot of teaching about the material world as well as the spiritual world, to the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Chaitanya Charitamrita. So what happens? We get the handbook of spiritual life. We start our course of study in Gita. Then we're moving on to the Srimad Bhagavatam, where it leads from the first canto to the tenth canto. And the tenth canto, once you're prepared, you can understand the pastimes of Krishna. That's a very wonderful thing. In Gokula, by the way. Not even in Goloka. Gokula has demons. Goloka has no demons. Gokula has pastimes that don't go on in the spiritual world. All the pastimes in the spiritual world are loving pastimes without any demonic influence. And the cowherd boys, they're in that Shankya Ras of friendship. That's also available. But it's not the only relationship that one can have. It's this very special, unique offering Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving and Prabhupada has delivered to us, this Madhurya Ras. That's ultimately what we're cultivating in worshipping Radharani. And is therefore whatever body we're in. So think of how our lives are progressing. Yes, some of us may be very nicely situated in Grihastha life, and eventually we'll become detached if we follow this process by the automatic mercy that comes through sadhana bhakti. Not that this is an artificial imposition on you, not that you have to try to become detached, I must become detached. No, no, it happens just through practicing, worshipping the deity, chanting Hare Krishna, offering prasad, everything just naturally occurs without really much austerity. Prabhupada states, he said, to serve Maya takes great austerity. And then he said, to serve Krishna is very easy. It can happen in a minute. And he says, to serve Maya is very austere. It takes a long time. And he said, to serve Krishna is very easy. It takes just a minute. And in Gita, of course, it says, one can become Krishna conscious in a moment or a million years. If we follow this path, which is very easy, we are automatically elevated. If we don't follow, we automatically descend. Now, of course, in your life, you may have periods where you do better than others, but eventually we become nishta, we become steady. And the more we become steady, the more the advancement becomes fixed. Not that you can't always fall down. Prabhupada also said, I am also afraid of Maya. That's an example to us. But when you become steady or nishta in devotional service, it's like a road that's very full of many potholes. And you're going along that road, you're going kind of slow because the car gets banged around. But when the road becomes smoother, you can go faster. But when you become steady, you accelerate, your advancement is accelerated, and you begin to taste this Krishna consciousness, the little drops of nectar begin to fall until eventually it becomes a big rain. So that's what you have to look forward to. Not just become hung up, oh my God, I'm so much attached, I have so much desire for the embrace of a man or a woman. We know that's there. It's certainly there in me, it's certainly there in most of us. But don't get discouraged. Prabhupada set the example, just live a life of regulation, regulated life. Chanting and dancing and prasad and taking care of what you have to take care of to fulfill your obligations. And Krishna will make all the rest of the arrangements for you. So you will become completely free. Liberated from material desire and tasting the nectar of Krishna bhakti. So perhaps there's some questions on this verse. And it's Mr. Mukesh. Mr. Mukesh can be counted on for good questions.
My reading is very less.
Just make it easy on me today, okay? Not too hard.
Yeah. Okay. A related question only. Prakriti I saw in four types of exposure is given, like three types of attitude we can have: goodness, passion and ignorance. That is on micro level. And at macro level, it is called Maya, outside world, without Krishna. And woman is considered as a Maya. And on a macro level, Durga Devi is considered as Maya. So these four things are totally unrelated to me. So how Durga Devi, every woman, and the world, and the three types of attitudes our mind holds, can be termed in under the same word, Maya or Prakriti.
Let me see if I understand your question correctly. You're saying that Maya includes many different types of Prakriti, many divisions or distinctions of Prakriti, is that correct?
No. At individual level, in our mind, we have three types of attitudes: goodness, passion and ignorance.
Yeah, the three modes.
That is on, say, micro level. Let us say micro level.
That's what?
Micro level or individual level.
The micro level, that's on the micro, the tiny, the...
And
yeah.
At macro level, it is known as Maya, the outside world.
Okay.
And when we consider a woman, it is called Maya, personified. And Durga Devi is also called Maya personified. Right? Durga Devi.
Yeah.
So how these four things are related, I wanted to know.
Oh, why it's all called Maya?
Yeah, Durga Devi called Maya, woman called Maya.
Maya so means...
Then this world is called Maya and these are three...
Maya is an overarching description of forgetting Krishna. That's Maya. So anything that will aid us in forgetting Krishna is Maya or illusion, no matter whether it's on the micro level or on the macro level. And so when we refer to Maya, that's Maya Prabhu, basically you're saying that will enable you to forget Krishna. So, how to remember Krishna, that's the trick. That's the regulated life. That's the getting up early and bathing according to regulation and appearing before the deity and chanting with the devotees and performing devotional service and offering. All that is helping us remember. So that's not Maya. And when we perform things outside that sadhana bhakti, that on a subtle level actually increases our forgetfulness. Even though we may not think, let's say I go to a movie that's Skyfall or something, and I sit there for two hours, and I'm just engrossed in that movie. That's Maya, because it's helping me forget Krishna. Now if I'm really smart, I won't go to the movie at all, but I'll do some book distribution. But We have to measure things based on that simple formula. What helps me remember Krishna? What helps me? And what is good? And what makes me forget Krishna? That's Maya.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. At what point of time will the act of surrendering to Krishna by a devotee is said to be total surrender?
When will there be, the question is, at what point of time will there be total surrender?
Yeah, total surrender. Because many are practicing Krishna consciousness, but they may not be totally surrendered.
So
at what point of time can it be said that a devotee is totally surrendered to Krishna?
Well, first of all, who's making the determination? The devotee or somebody else? What's your point of reference? Who's making that judgment?
See, when we use the word, a devotee is totally surrendered to Krishna, what does it mean?
Well, as I say, who's making that determination? Who's judging? Okay, I'll make it easier for you. I stumped him. I got him. If you're not a pure devotee, how can you judge somebody else's purity? Your point of reference is already flawed. Therefore, it's recommended we don't judge another person's advancement except by their activity. Because first of all, you can't even understand the mind of a pure devotee. The impure cannot understand pure. We can receive mercy, we can receive kripa from a pure devotee. So we can be attracted to a person who's pure. But we can't necessarily judge what's in another person's mind or heart. And it's interesting because that's what we tend to do all the time. And you know, to some extent you can adjust your association by how a person is acting. Are they acting in the sadhana, way that we describe the various ways of sadhana bhakti or not? That we can do. But whether they're pure or not, even the pure devotee doesn't think of himself as a pure devotee. So he's not going to say, I'm pure. How many pure devotees do we have in the room? Do we have any? Raise your hand if you're a pure devotee, please. Anybody? Nobody? We've got to have at least one pure devotee in the house here, no? See, a pure devotee wouldn't raise his hand. Because he's so humble, he just thinks, look at Haridas Thakur, how he thought of himself, I'm so fallen. You know? So, first of all, we can't even assume that we can judge that. And secondly, even if somebody were to say that they were, that's their disqualification. So basically what I'm saying is, the only way you can recognize a person who's on that platform is within your own heart, you experience that person's purity. And your heart is going to be different than someone else's. That's why we have so many gurus in ISKCON. And some person may be attracted to, Gopal Krishna Maharaj. Oh, he's so pure. He comes, and look at his sadhana. He's flawless in the sadhana. And some person may say, he's okay, but he's a little kind of, he's always busy, too hard to talk to. I like Radhanath Swami's lectures better. Or someone say, no, Radhanath Swami's great and everything, but how can you compare him to Indradyumna Swami, who's just taking the holy name to so many places? What do? You can start to compare, It's all your internal experience. One thing we can all agree on, I think, is that we all have the experience that Srila Prabhupada's purity is unparalleled. Otherwise, we wouldn't all be together in an ISKCON temple. We wouldn't be all together offering our obeisances to Srila Prabhupada. We have some agreement there. And to some extent, that's our good fortune. Because in the material world, each one of us has so many different tastes, so many different modes of nature the three modes are combining in different ways, unlimited ways. that it makes it difficult for us to agree. So Krishna is so kind, he sent a person with whom we can all agree. Even the Ritviks agree. Everybody agrees that Prabhupada is that purity. And that's why he's the founder Acharya. That's why the founder Acharya will remain known for the next 10,000 years. Many of our names will be lost. In fact, almost all of our names, even of the present gurus, most of them will be lost in due course of time. I was mentioning to someone that we're doing a Vyasapuj for Bhakti Sarup Damodar Maharaj the other day. I said, and when all those disciples are gone, there won't be any more Vyasapujas of Bhakti Sarup Damodar. When all the disciples of Bhakti Siddhanta are gone, there won't be any more Vyasapujas of Bhakti Siddhanta. But when all the disciples of Prabhupada are gone, left their bodies, there will still be the Vyasa Puja of Srila Prabhupada. That's how important he is to the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I think that's worth thinking about when we look at our relationships and how we regard this founder Acharya. His stature will be intact for the next 10,000 years. We can't say that about ourselves. Does that answer your question?
Prabhu, Hare Krishna. What made me ask this question was, I always carry a feeling that I am not totally surrendered to Krishna, I am not totally surrendered to Krishna. It is to judge my own self that I ask this question. Not for judging others.
So he's saying that he asked the question about how will he know if he's totally surrendered to Krishna? And the answer is the same. Only you will know. And even those that are completely surrendered to Krishna, like Srila Prabhupada, appear to us in a very humble way, where they didn't think of themselves as totally surrendered to Krishna. Most of it, at outer appearances. Sometimes Prabhupada would give indication. What was that, Charanakarta, you were telling me? Prabhupada said one time about his, you gave some pastime about when Prabhupada acknowledged his position. Yeah, he kind of acknowledged, you know, that. What was that story?
About the deer?
Yeah.
You want me to tell that story?
Yeah, tell the story.
Srila Prabhupada was on a walk in Detroit, and he was walking through the park. And there's deer in the park. And whenever the devotees were there chanting japa, the deer would see them, and the deer would run away. But this morning, Prabhupada was on the morning walk there. So Prabhupada was walking with the devotees on the path, and one deer came. And his eyes were just fixed on Srila Prabhupada. He was totally not afraid. And he just stood there, just with his eyes fixed on Prabhupada. As Prabhupada was getting closer, the deer just stepped off the path, unafraid. And one devotee said, Srila Prabhupada, perhaps because you're a pure devotee, that deer is not afraid. Prabhupada didn't say anything, kept walking. Then another deer came on the path. The same thing, unafraid, just his eyes fixed on Prabhupada. And as Prabhupada got closer, the deer just stepped off away from the path. And then Prabhupada looked at that devotee and he said, perhaps you're right.
So sometimes Prabhupada gave us a hint, but he wasn't for purposes of preaching. He would always take the humble position. I'm just a humble servant.
One answer to your question is, if you're eating, how do you know when you're full? you just know automatically. So that's how you can know when you're becoming more and more Krishna conscious. You just know. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. So thank you very much. And have a wonderful Gita Jayanti. Take advantage. Those of you who are going to read the whole Gita. How many people are going to read a little, at least some of the Gita today? How many hands? Those of you who don't have your hands up, just open it up to any verse. Read that verse in purport. Take advantage of Prabhupada's nectarian instructions. And you will make a little more further advancement in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada wanted us to read at least an hour a day. Woefully, I owe many, many, many hours that haven't followed that instruction, but I keep hoping someday I'll get a chance. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada ki. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki.